Hello, and welcome to Social Design Insights, the weekly podcast that brings you the leading voices of the social design movement from the fields of architecture, engineering, planning, art, and whoever else we can find who's out there trying to make the world a better place. I'm your co-host, Eric Kessel, and I'm here as always with Karen Kuby.
Hi, Eric. Good talking with you.
How have you been?
I've been good. It's spring finally, so I'm happy about that.
I'm happy as well, and I'm happy that we're doing this interview today. We had a remarkable opportunity to catch up with an amazing Rwandan architect named Christian Benimana, and he was gracious enough to grant us an interview from the job site. So he was just getting off a hard day's work on the job site, and he was kind enough to call in and talk to us about a project that he's been spearheading called the African Design Center. The center is an initiative of Mass Design and grew out of Mass's work in Rwanda. Mass Design was, of course, one of the winners of the 2012 Curry Stone Design Prize, and is renowned for the social justice work that they do all over the world. As you'll hear in the interview, it was an organic process, whereby Mass had been doing work in Rwanda, recognized the need for such an institution like the center, and then went ahead and went forward with it, under Christian's leadership.
You know, I think he's doing amazing work, and I think what I really admire about the project and the ambitions most is, you know, it starts from really big problems, right? It starts by saying, okay, by 2050, the population of Africa is going to double. You're going to need 700 million new units of housing, and there's no architects, or not no architects, but there's 75 times more architects per capita in the United States than there are in East Africa. So I think a lot of people would hear that and just give up. So what I really admire is even just starting to try to do something to increase capacity and to think about what does it take to get enough architects to actually make that happen.
I think it's a remarkable challenge. And Africa, of course, has been subject to centuries of colonialism. And even now, it suffers under a kind of cultural colonialism where, you know, styles and aesthetics and methodologies and materials are incubated in the West and in the design schools of the West. And then they're taken back to Africa, either by Western architects or by African architects who have studied in the West. And the result is often frustratingly a system of architecture that does not meet, that does not comport with the needs and the materials and the culture on the ground. So Christian's ambition is to create a design academy that is truly rooted in the issues of place and the issues confronting these emerging African cities. And can they learn from the mistakes and the hyperdevelopment of Asian cities and Western cities and develop a brand of architecture that is strictly African?
Christian's background is so interesting. You can tell right away what an ambitious, driven person he is. He's from Rwanda, and since there were no design schools there, he went to school for architecture in China and had to learn to speak Chinese in a year so that he could get there. So, you know, he's an amazing person. And I think you also bring up, you know, I was talking about the challenges out in the world and that being a starting point, but you're totally right that those challenges and the colonial history are intertwined with pedagogical issues that this project is confronting.
You want to listen to this interview?
Yes, I do.
Let's do it. Christian, thank you so much for joining us on the show. We really appreciate your time and especially calling in from the site. I know Karen and I are both very excited to hear the story behind the African Design Center, and I know our audience is as well. I was wondering if we could start there. What was the original thought process that led to the creation of this school? Do you remember where you were and what you were thinking and how you began to say, hey, like this is what's needed in Kigali right now?
Well, thanks, Eric. That's a good question. When was the original thought process came about the African Design Center? I can't pin it down to a moment, a particular moment that I can speak to. It's part of lessons we learned over the time as we're implementing projects at Mass. We were encountering the same problems in different forms, of course. One problem that kept coming up over and over again was this lack of real trained architects and designers and construction workers in the industry. We often find that it's difficult to get people who understand what it takes to implement quality projects, let alone high impact projects. And because of that, we went back and did some background research to try to understand where that talent could exist, if it exists. And to our surprise, we didn't find any place where it's possible, specifically in the case of Africa. For us, that was the moment where we thought something needs to be done about creating the talent that is needed to support the development of the continent. We tested the idea on one project we had, which we deemed was the right size and complexity to test this model, using, of course, a partnership we've had with the Global Health Corps, and tested two fellows to see what the outcomes of a certain curriculum delivered on a project site could produce as a result. And that was more like our trial run that allows us to say, I think we can comfortably begin a program that can effectively achieve what we seek to achieve here.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. I'm so curious. I would love for you to paint a picture of what it's like at the African Design Center, maybe for us and our listeners. You know, if we were there, what's going on this week, for instance? What are the fellows up to? Tell us about it.
There's a lot going on at the African Design Center at the moment. I could take a day to talk about it, but I'll try to summarize it as much as I can. So right now we are in the last rotation of the program, which means that we have three groups working on three different things. One group is working to implement the build project on site, and they're casting concrete and building stone masonry and checking levels and all of those things. The other group is doing research. One of the rotation focuses on researching a broader topic on problems that our society is facing at the moment. This rotation chose to focus on climate change and the effect of climate change on societies and how that has an effect on migrations and people's immigrations and migrations. They focus on a place called Narok in Kenya. They took a trip last week there, and this week they're compiling their findings for their trip, including them witnessing the entire city flooding because of the rains that fell when they were there, and they witnessed it. So I'm quite excited to see what they're going to present at the end of their rotation. Then the other rotation, the fellows of part of that rotation focuses on a specific craft or a specific material, and they investigate what could be done or could be pushed in terms of technologies or researched to try to understand the skills and the value of the material as it presents now and what it could be used for in the future. So one fellow is looking at leather and tannery. The other fellow is looking at recycling plastic, and the other fellow is looking at recycled paper. And those basically focuses on try to understand the available skills in Africa, the available opportunities, and the available materials.
That's amazing. And I love the triumvirate of, you know, working on site, doing research and looking at materials. And, you know, when we've been doing these interviews that we've been doing for a couple of months now, I'm always asking myself, why isn't all design school like that? Why isn't all architecture school like that? Because it seems like the way to teach this craft. Why is it especially important in the dialogue and the landscape of African cities that we have this kind of education as opposed to the more historicist, the more familiar forms of education that we're aware of in the West?
Yeah, that's it's an argument we've had to try to understand also from our work. The answer is twofold. One is that there is an urgent need for development in general to accommodate the rising in population, but also in economic situations of these African countries. And because of that, the traditional trajectory of training professionals through academia is not going to give us enough time to do that, but also is not going to give us the best results that we need, which brings me to the second part of the reasons why. There has been significant strides in terms of technology. And because of that, also you find that how we're thinking about building knowledge in the past is, in our case, in architecture and in many disciplines that I can think of, I can say outdated. We are in the 21st century at the moment, and there's need to seriously figure out how to integrate technology, but also in a way that is still human and is contextually appropriate. And I think that's why, for Africa specifically, those two things have to be considered as we think about what the next models of training, not only in architecture, should be.
That's super interesting. And I'm interested, of course, when you're leading something like this, you have to think about big ideas, like what should curriculum look like? And you also have to make the place work, right? You have to run it. So can you tell us a little bit about how that works? Who funds this? Is there tuition? Who's teaching? Sort of some of those questions.
The curriculum was developed based on our, when I say our, I mean at MASS. We at MASS have developed a design methodology that we apply in all our design and build projects. So the curriculum took off from that to try to understand what valuable lessons have we learned that we believe it's invaluable to convey to these young professionals to prepare them to become high impact designers. That also meant that we needed to supplement it with extra workshops and lectures about ongoing topics and discussions about the state of architecture worldwide. One thing that we knew from the outset was that this is not meant to be just for Africa. We're not training or educating designers who are only relevant in the African context. We are training the best architects and designers. We just happen to do it in Africa because that's where we work primarily. How we got funding, we got an opportunity to present this idea at the UN General Assembly, I think in 2015. There was a summit called Solutions Summit, which awarded certain ideas with appropriate support to get off the ground. I presented the idea among 400 other ideas submitted, and it was selected. And from there, we got a little bit of seed funding that allowed us to program, basically finish all the curriculum development and background research, and hire the first cohort of fellows. I think the last part of the question was about, is there tuition and how is it run? When we were hiring our first cohort of fellows, we did a survey to try to understand the audience of people we are looking for. The characteristics of people we wanted to be part of this first cohort for us to start from were recent graduates from professional degree programs. And because of that, there are people who are still in financial situations that is not quite independent. Couple that with some family backgrounds that doesn't allow them to pay for extra studies, which is the case in most African countries, we felt compelled to try to understand how we can financially support all the fellows. So we offered an opportunity to apply for financial sponsorship. And not to our surprise, I would say, everybody applied to financial sponsorship and scholarships. So that told us that even though everybody recognizes that this is needed, and we received many more applications than we had hoped for, but still, most people will not be able to sponsor themselves to take part in this fellowship.
And would you identify that as, you know, one of the challenges of scaling this particular model? You know, as you've been speaking, I've been thinking, okay, you know, how do we take this and replicate it not only in Africa, but as you say, kind of everywhere? Actually, what are the major challenges that you're facing at the moment?
The challenges to replicate or scaling this model, I don't think that the funding is a problem itself, because the program itself is scheduled around a design-built project. These design-built projects worldwide always have enough capital in them to support training or education of young professionals if planned properly. I'm quite certain, like every single project which is going on in Africa or in other parts of the world, could build in some contingency or some budget that allowed them to plan an education and training part of the project. The only challenge that we face at the moment in scaling the ADC, I think, is for us to understand more the effect of this model. We're in our first cohort. We, even though we're in the last days, every day of the program to date is still the first day of ever doing this. So we need to kind of wrap this up first and take a seat and look back at the lessons we've learned, understand what we've done well and what we haven't done well, maybe that could use improvement, and then come up with a version 2, if I may say, which will allow us to comfortably say we know for sure, for certain, that this is the way we're able to duplicate this and replicate it.
You're listening to Social Design Insights with Eric Kessel and Karen Kuby. We hope you've been enjoying these thoughts from Christian Benimana of the African Design Center on how this experiment came to be. But we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to be talking more about the logistics of the center and how Christian makes it all work. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more Social Design Insights after the break. Welcome back to Social Design Insights with Eric Kessel and Karen Kuby. We've been speaking with Christian Benimana of the African Design Center about the history and structure of the center. Coming up, we're going to be talking a bit more about Christian's pedagogical philosophy and what the future holds for the center and for design in Africa.
What are your thoughts right now on what's next after? I understand there are 11 fellows now. What's your dream for where this goes from here?
Yeah, we're discussing with them about post-fellowship opportunities and plans to try to understand how we can support them better. We've had indications of what people want to do. Some people are taking postgraduate studies with particular interests that they've developed through ADC. We have people who have ambitions to begin their own businesses, their own firms, and try to do projects using these same methodologies in their own countries. And basically, to me, what I'm trying to figure out is a system that continues to support this alumni of the ADC Fellowship Program to have that muscle behind them that allows them to continue implementing the lessons they've learned at ADC. My hopes or my dreams is maybe a Pritzker in 5 years from one of our alumni.
Excellent. Do you think any of your alumni are going to come back and be teachers to the next generation in version 2?
Actually, all of them are going to come back. We're going to have to lean on them to come back and give lectures, even share their own experiences during the fellowship and post-fellowship to try to motivate and inspire the next cohort. They're going to be the ADC family for a long time, hopefully. We don't lose contact or track. But also the programming for subsequent program, I think it's important. We've seen how as convening the leading architects and designers on the continent in Africa to come and talk with our fellows has been so inspiring for them and actually provided them with guidance or clarity into the situation where they're in and the hopes that everybody have for them. So I believe that the first cohort is going to play the same role for the subsequent cohorts.
Right. And Christian, so in doing research, you're a very, very busy person, I noticed, and you have at least 2 jobs, right? You run the African Design Center, and you also direct the Rwanda programs for the Mass Design Group, which, of course, has its head office in Boston, and I think you've been working with them since 2010. I would love for you to help us understand the relationship between the Design Center and the practice and how that works.
Right. So when we had this idea, we did it through Mass Project. We understood it from our Mass projects. And even when we pitched this idea to take it off the ground and run, it was still as Mass. The African Design Center is not an entity by itself yet. It's still a program started and being implemented by Mass. Though the vision is that at some point, we would love to see it become its own entity and fly. So that's why I need to maintain my feet on both sides, because there's a lot of coordination that has to happen on both sides. So that's how it works at the moment. There's still no clear or physical distinction between MaaS and ADC, though we're really trying to make sure that for the next cohort of African Design Center fellows, by that time, we have set up a system that allows us to start begin create this separation, and I can dedicate my time much more for the African Design Center. Because like you said, it's becoming very busy very quickly.
One of the kind of constant concerns that Karen and I have encountered in doing this segment is, you know, looking at these kind of large old institutions. And we speak with reformers within those institutions who are trying to move design education in a particular direction. And of course, you know, we have context, right? We have an institutional context, we have historic and a cultural context. And, you know, one of the things that I've really loved and been impressed by the African Design Center is that it's sort of divorced from all that, right? I mean, it's not attached to a university, it's not attached to, you know, a colonial heritage or anything like that. You've really had the opportunity to start essentially from scratch and ask yourselves, you know, what does it take to really be a great designer? So what should we be teaching these kids in order that they can go out and make really great design? Do you see any role for, you know, these sort of more formal institutions? I mean, is this a program that could be attached to an African university, or does this necessarily have to be attached to a project and on the job site?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I don't think it needs to be either or the other. We intentionally detached ourselves from any existing university or other large institutions on purpose, because we wanted to make sure we have the legroom to experiment. And that's, as you might know, can be quite difficult when you are in a large institution that is established as its own protocols and bureaucracy.
No, I don't know anything about that.
Right. The other part of it is that we believe where we are now in this program that there are certain things that this large institution, the program can benefit from them, obviously. One of them I can point to is that we get fellows from very different parts of Africa. They come from very different programs. They come from very different backgrounds and understanding and languages. And because of that, there's a need to kind of do a more harmonizing exercises at the beginning, which, if you think about it, these large universities and learning institutions are really good at. People from very different backgrounds and make them one person, one generic designer. However, I think the moment where this could happen is when also on the side of institutions and universities, there is this flexibility to amend their programs, to allow some of this innovation to infiltrate their own processes. That's the only way that is going to happen. But for the African Design Center Fellowship to be effective, I insist that it has to be tied on a real practical experience. It can be a design build project in architecture or a furniture making or other product design and production or testing, but it has to be something practical for these lessons to sink into the minds of the people we are trying to reach out to.
I understand from talking with you and from looking at your materials, the emphasis on design build. I also noticed that there is an element of theory in your curriculum. Can you tell us about that and how that lines up with the rest of the work?
We want to approach the African Design Center Fellowship with a mindset that, if I can call it challenges expertise. And what I mean by that is to say that we're not saying that the existing knowledge and theory around architecture is not accurate or is not correct, but is to say that it has leaned away from anything that is typically African today. That's general knowledge, but also try to understand why it hasn't worked in the particular conditions we are dealing with in this continent. To challenge that expertise, it's important that someone who takes on the challenge understand that expertise, what it is. So we're trying to learn and unlearn. Like, how do we make sure that these things we've been taught at university, sometimes not well taught, to be honest, how can we make sure we understand them correctly, so we have the grounds to challenge them or complement them if they're missing critical knowledge, and then advocate for those changes for universities, for other knowledge creators, and other professionals who exist in the practice at the moment. but more importantly, to the young African and designers who are coming up, because those are like the future, the hope, who are going to change these things. We can be agents who begin, who initiate this change, but we're going to lean on these upcoming designers to implement those changes.
And have you received any sort of pushback or criticism from those institutions? I mean, what do you say to the more traditional institutions that are, you know, that are very theory heavy? Are they pushing back and saying like, no, like this is the way that we teach architecture and Christian's not doing any of that?
No, surprisingly not. We have actually had a lot of interest in people trying to understand what we're doing, which we think is a good thing. And hopefully they can also begin to amend. But also it's because most architecture programs are questioning how they teach architecture at the moment. So maybe this is an opportune moment to plug into that discussion that is already ongoing to try to say maybe we are onto something here that could lead into how we change these architecture programs to be more effective.
I'm so glad that Eric and I got a chance to talk with you today. I'm really impressed with the work you're doing. So we close every one of these interviews in the education series by asking for three recommendations. You have an amazing background from Africa and educated in China. It's so interesting. So my first recommendation request is, can you recommend to us either a book or a teacher that had an impression on you when you were a student?
I really have to think hard on this one because I can only recall back when I started practice, things that have had an influence on me. And the book, Just Mercy by Brian Stevenson, probably had the most profound change when I read it.
What's that about?
Brian Stevenson, it's called Just Mercy. He talks about the need to connect with people who are incarcerated in the US and talks about his journey to become a lawyer. When he began law school, he didn't know anything about law. He went to law school because that's the only major he didn't want to have any knowledge or degree about before. I think that resonated a little bit with my journey and then how he learned about all the work he does because he was immersed in this prison system in the US. If I hadn't been immersed in the work that Mass was doing in Rwanda, I would not be the same architect I am today.
Wow, that definitely sounds like a powerful book. Our second question or our second request for recommendation is, you know, when you encounter students who are interested in social justice today, what do you recommend they read?
Yeah, the title eludes me, but I always recommend this book written by Paul Farmer and Dr. Kim, the president of World Bank. It's called, it eludes me, the title. Anyway, it talks about they made a documentary recently, and that's the only title that is in my mind. The documentary is called Bending the Arc.
Okay, we have one more. Can you recommend an educator whose work inspires you today?
I would recommend Mark Olweni. He is the dean of the architecture school at the Uganda Martyrs University in Nkozi, Uganda.
Excellent. Why is he the educator that sprung to your mind?
Because of many people I've met involved in the architecture education on the continent. He is the person who's trying to change the architecture education within an established university and institution, and a private one. I think his long battle to try to make this change and expose the students of architecture in this department, in this faculty, to a different model of understanding architecture and updating the architecture discourse, the architecture education discourse on the continent is quite commendable.
Well, that's amazing. And for our listeners, we'll actually link to all of Christian's recommendations and make sure that we can put you in touch with the documentaries, books, and educators that he's so eloquently spoken about. Christian, thank you so much again for joining us.
It's my absolute pleasure. I want to emphasize and again be appreciative of platforms like yours. If you don't have your voice, there are many people out there who might not know what we're trying to do. And I think the work you do is as important to the work you're doing. I speak for the entire ADC team when I say we really appreciate you reaching out and featuring our story.
Well, it's our pleasure, and we know that our audience is going to get a lot out of it. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Take care.
You're listening to Social Design Insights with Eric Kessel and Karen Kuby. We'd like to thank our guest of the week, Christian Benimana of the African Design Center and Mass Design, for sharing with us this innovative model of design education and his thoughts on the future of African cities. You can find links to the work of the center at our website at socialdesigninsights.com. There you also find galleries of their work, as well as links to further reading as suggested by Christian. If you have any feedback on the show, ideas for guests, or if you just want to chat, you can always write to me at eric@socialdesigninsights.com. That's E-R-I-C at socialdesigninsights.com. Social Design Insights is an initiative of the Curry Stone Foundation. If you haven't already, please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Curry Stone Foundation. That's Curry Stone, F-D-N.